University in the School of Medicine. He's been a Doris Duke Fellow at Washington University and is going to be working in an emergency department in the future, and will be speaking to us about physical exam measures having a low yield in employment screening for carpal tunnel syndrome.
Well, before I start, I'd like to acknowledge the co-authors on my presentation, especially my mentor, Dr. Evanoff, who's here in the audience today. I'd also like to thank the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation for funding my fellowship that allowed me to do the research that I'm presenting today, as well as the CDC and NIOSH for funding the grant that supports our project as a whole. So to begin, I just want to say that I don't have any personal financial relationships with commercial interest to disclose today. And to give a little background, carpal tunnel syndrome is a common and costly work-related disease, and it has a prevalence between about 1 to 5% in the general population. It's also a leading cause of work-related disability, averaging about 27 lost workdays per case. It's the most common hand surgery performed in the United States, and it costs more than $2 billion annually, so a very costly and significant problem. So what employers have done is they've come up with these post-offer pre-placement screenings for carpal tunnel syndrome to limit the number of cases that they have within their workforce and to cut down on workers' compensation costs. These typically use a combination of physical exam maneuvers, sometimes with the addition of nerve conduction studies. And some of these companies actually use these screening exams to base hiring decisions on. If somebody comes in and has a positive screening exam, they might not actually give them a job that the person wants or would give them the salary they want based on these exams. And they use these exams despite two points. One, that the physical exam as a screening maneuver has really not very rarely, it's been rarely studied in an otherwise healthy worker population with a low prevalence. And in the studies that have been done, especially in clinical populations such as those in like an orthopedics clinic or a family practice office, the physical exam is still shown to have a poor overlap with both carpal tunnel syndrome and with median nerve conduction abnormalities. So our question was whether these physical exam maneuvers are strongly associated with different measures of carpal tunnel syndrome. So to do my study, we took data from a cohort of newly hired workers from 8 companies and 3 trade construction unions in the St. Louis area. And all of the subjects in the study completed a symptom questionnaire, a musculoskeletal physical exam, and nerve conduction testing. Now, the questionnaire that we used assessed both the type of symptoms and the anatomic distribution of the symptoms in each patient. And the symptoms were then classified as classic, probable, possible, or unlikely using a cat's hand diagram that is specific for carpal tunnel syndrome. And then the nerve conduction testing measured both motor and sensory conduction of the median and ulnar nerves across the wrist. And here's the combination physical exam that we used for our study. I highlighted three of the physical exam maneuvers in red: Semmes-Weinstein sensory testing, Tinel's test, and Phelan's maneuver, which these three are commonly used in assessing carpal tunnel syndrome in clinical populations and in these screening exams. And we also included Finkelstein's test, inspection, palpation, and resistance, which all assess other musculoskeletal disorders of the hand and the wrist. So we mainly focused on three outcomes. The first was median nerve conduction abnormalities, probable or classic carpal tunnel syndrome symptoms as assessed by the cat's hand diagram, and then carpal tunnel syndrome itself that we defined as a combination of 1 and 2. And that's a definition that has been well established in the literature in many other studies. So our analysis was performed in two parts. The first part, we calculated the sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, and negative predictive value for each measure. And then we evaluated the overlap between the physical exam, carpal tunnel syndrome symptoms, and nerve conduction using a Venn diagram. It's important to note that as part of our analysis, we did do a composite physical exam where a patient had to have at least one positive finding of either Tinel's test, Phelan's maneuver, or Semmes-Weinstein sensory testing. So these are the characteristics of our population. It was a relatively young population, about 30.3 years old, with a little bit overweight, about 28.5 on their body mass index. It was about two-thirds male and about two-thirds Caucasian, with about one-third African-American. We also, important to note, that our population had a very low prevalence of diabetes, hypothyroidism, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, and other chronic diseases. We included that in our questionnaire. So here's the prevalence of the various exam measures that we used. Again, I highlighted the three common carpal tunnel syndrome measures in red again. Semmes-Weinstein sensory testing had the highest prevalence at 31.2%, followed by Tinel's test and Phelan's test at 11.7% and 9.5%. Interestingly, Finkelstein's maneuver had a prevalence of 24.8%. Now, Finkelstein's maneuver actually measures de Quervain's tenosynovitis uveitis, which is another common hand-wrist musculoskeletal disorder. And here are the prevalence of our outcomes. Median nerve conduction abnormalities had the highest prevalence at 9%, followed by carpal tunnel syndrome symptoms at 3.4%, and then carpal tunnel syndrome cases at 1.2%, which falls within the established mean that we found within the literature of the general population having prevalence between 1 and 5%. So how did this do? Well, Semmes-Weinstein sensory testing performed the best with about 76.9% sensitivity and 69.4% specificity for carpal tunnel syndrome, which is still not that great when you're considering that this is supposed to be a screening measure for the disease. Following that, the composite physical exam measure that we did had a sensitivity of only 53.4% and a specificity of 81.5%. All of our other exam measures, including Tinel's and Phelan's test, had sensitivities below 38% for all of our outcomes. So none of these really did very well. So what were our conclusions on this? Skipping my Venn diagram that I mentioned here. This is actually one of the most important parts of our presentation. And there's two things that I want to point out here for you guys, if I can get the mouse pointer to work here. First thing I want to point out is I want you to look down here at the bottom down here for a physical exam. Now, we had 209 cases. This is our composite physical exam, by the way, where they had to have one positive finding of either Tinel's, Phelan's, or Semmes-Weinstein. Now, we had 209 cases down here that had a positive physical exam finding but did not fit into either category. They had no CTS symptoms as defined by the CAT-SCAN diagram and no nerve conduction abnormalities at all. So that's 209 people that might have come up as positive on this physical exam and been determined to have carpal tunnel syndrome that we would say probably would not. And then if you look over here to the right, to our carpal tunnel syndrome symptoms and nerve conduction, you'll see that these cases right here fit into our definition of what we consider carpal tunnel syndrome as having the symptoms plus the nerve conduction. Now, that's 13 positive cases in our study, and 7 of these cases actually did have a positive physical exam finding. But that's only a little over half of our cases, because if you see here, 6 people who we say have carpal tunnel syndrome based on our definition did not have a single positive physical exam finding according to our composite physical exam. So what's that telling us? It tells us that using the physical exam as a screening measure, you're going to have a high degree of both false positive and false negatives, meaning that this probably isn't a very good screening measure to be basing much on. So now let's go to our conclusions. So basically, we felt that in an active working population, the physical exam did have a low yield for carpal tunnel syndrome, no matter how we defined it, and that even our composite physical exam measure showed very little utility in our newly employed worker population. The symptoms do remain more sensitive and specific at identifying the abnormal nerve conduction associated with carpal tunnel syndrome, but we feel that the physical exam itself should really play little to no role in pre-employment screenings for the disease. Now, the role in surveillance for CTS remains unclear, but that's something that we plan to do as we get our follow-up data and can do a more longitudinal study. So with that, I'd like to thank you all for coming and listening to me at the end of your day today, and open this up to any questions you might have. We did have occupation information, and the cohort that we put together actually is putting out a lot of different papers and a lot of different information, and some of the other studies and projects that are being done is looking at the occupation information, things from using categories from ONET or from the information that we gained, and actually our questionnaire covered some of the actual physical activities that people do in their jobs, and so some of that's going to be coming out in some of our later studies that will be done from this.
So we're next. I mean, this obviously is showing.
Yeah. And well,
what you're thinking about.
There's two things. One, I'd like to acknowledge Ted Armstrong, who's here in the audience as well, did a poster earlier this week that found that the nerve conduction was also weakly correlated with carpal tunnel syndrome symptoms. So even that's not even helping all that well. And what we really want to do from this is look longitudinally. My study was a cross-sectional study, which obviously gives us some information, but not all the information that we could use. So we're getting the end of our 18-month follow-up data right now, and the 36 follow-up is starting to come back now. So what we'd like to do is take some of this and take a very similar design to this and look longitudinally and see, you know, how does this play out in a surveillance type exam, maybe people who've already been hired and working for 18 months or 36 months, and see how it fits in that situation as well. So it'll be interesting to see as we get those results back. So.
Have you looked at any other leisure activities that may contribute to carpal tunnel? I don't know, tennis players, someone like this?
It has. Some of our questionnaire did assess that, although most of what we looked at in our cohort doesn't really cover much of that. But what we did feel was that in comparison to their job, the job tended to play a much larger role in somebody's development of the disease. If you think somebody works 40 hours a week, let's say, as a carpenter, and they might go home and do, let's say they go home and do, like they build something in their own house for, 10 hours a week or something like that on a hobby, the job is still a much bigger, plays a much bigger role in that. But it would be interesting to see what comes out from that, too. So. And we actually are, some of our studies are actually doing that, is looking at the job category and seeing how that plays with the disease as well. Duration is going to be limited. That could be something that we can do as we get, because most of our population was a newly hired population at the start of our study. It's something that we can look at towards the 18-month and the 36-month data, but it'd be really interesting if we could keep following this, 5-10 years down the road and see how that plays into it as well. But some of that will be coming out from our study as well, so. And if you have more questions, you can actually talk to Dr. Evanoff. He knows a lot more about some of the other studies that are being done within our project, and he's been working on this a lot longer than I have. So. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Thank you. We have some really nice presentations on screening and surveillance, different surveillance projects. So, we think surveillance rocks. Everybody keep doing it. Thank you. Thanks a lot. You guys did great presentations.
Nice to meet you. Co pan prawie tutaj jeszcze mogę podać?
Tutaj ja jestem w play-offu.
No aha, okej, okay, czyli koło DC?
Morgantown, zachodnie dziewczyny.
Aha.
Z Tish Davis to mamy tyle wspólnego, że wspólnie prowadzimy nadzór nad Afmą i Krzemiszem.
Aha, faktycznie, na Tishie.
Często się spotykamy. Jedna z osób w moim zespole jest technicznym doradcą. No, Masashi to jest taką aktywnym stałym, ale z UMass w No niewiele mam wspólnego. Głównie tak. Te dane, to oni tam wspólnie.
Czyli ja tam w Waszyngtonie mieszkałam. Znaczy w Virginii. Metro, jedno metro. Stop, dalej.
To już na stałe?
Na stałe.
To co po PhD?
No, nie wiem. Jeszcze zobaczę. Jeszcze mamy przynajmniej rok skończyć. Ale znaczy w Polsce pracowałam w konsultingu.
No ja lubię pracę dla ludzi.
I pan też zostaje tutaj? Czy...
No
też
zostaje, tak jak już z mieszanymi uczuciami.
Aha, to zawsze.
No to tak jest, gdzie jest praca, tam jest też.
Tam jest, ja. A w którym